Time for another True Life Alp story. I got a call from a friend of mine yesterday, honestly, true story, who said his girlfriend had just broken up with him over Alp. He wouldn't stop. And I thought to myself, that's kind of sad. And he said, no, it's not sad. Imagine if I'd married her. Now I know. I was saved. Then the next day, this same friend is driving at twice the speed limit through a major American city, pulled over by a cop in a speed trap. Cop takes his license registration, goes back to the patrol car, runs him, comes back, looks in the window, and sees a tin of Alp on the dashboard. Pauses, stunned, says to my friend, you use Alp? Yeah, I do, says my friend. So do I, says the cop. We all do. He looks at my friend thoughtfully and goes, drive safely, sir, and hands back his license and registration. No ticket. So in 2 days, he's saved from a tragic marriage to a girl who doesn't like Alp and a speeding ticket. All true. It's more than a nicotine match. In a nation of 350 million people, we're guessing there are about 350 million Alp stories. Email us yours. We want to know and read it on the air. Email tellall@alppouch.com. Tellall@alppouch.com. Give us your Alp story.
Afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Colorado Show. What's up, Karen?
What's up? How are you?
I'm great. You're not in the car. I love it when you're not in the car.
Yeah, it was a rental.
It's a nice car. It was not a rebuke on the car.
Nice.
It's good to see you. And you and I haven't really talked in a while. And so we've got a lot of stuff to catch up on. We also have a guest joining us who I don't see if her camera is working. So I'm going to give her a... Oh, there we go. Okay. So we're going to bring her on in just a second. We have a great guest joining us. I'm very excited about that. But today's show is brought to you by Alp, alp.com/CDM, or get, is it getalp.com/CDM? I think it is. But your code at Alp for nicotine pouches is CDM, and we'll get to a couple of other sponsors a little bit later in the show. The big news that we're going to talk about on today's show, first, right off the bat, is the Senate District 9 special election. So Paul Lundeen was the senator for Senate District 9, and he resigned, I believe, creating a vacancy. So they held a special election, and we're going to talk about it. Joining us now is the victor of that special election, the new senator for Senate District 9 in the state of Colorado, veteran, mom, activist, very serious person, U.S. Air Force instructor at the academy, amazing all-around person, Linda Zamora Wilson. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you sound great. You sound great, and you look great. So tell people, like, Karen and I know you. I mean, we go way back. We've all, you know, kind of been in it in our state for the past almost 5 years now. But for people more broadly, Linda, tell everybody a little bit about you, your background, who you are.
Well, I'll start off with my education, and then go into the jobs that I had. So. I've been blessed to have a PhD in economics, a master's in mathematics, a master's in education, and a master's in international economics. I served 25 years in the Air Force and was able to do some really cool jobs as far as be a flight test analyst, flying in F-15s and F-16s, and we were doing operational tests on the F-22. That was the latest and greatest aircraft at the time. I've taught at the Air Force Academy.
Hang on, pause on that one, because like that's kind of your early Air Force career, right?
As a captain.
Yeah, and so what was it? You weren't a pilot, but you were doing flight test analyst. You're up there in there. What kind of stuff are you looking at? What was that job?
So this is at the operational test stage, not the development. This is where we're shaking the aircraft and pushing the envelope and seeing if this is truly what the warfighter has asked for. So we're testing the guns. We're testing, we call it BFM, basic fighting maneuvers. So you're dogfighting. Will it outmaneuver? We were supposed to show that it was twice as good as the F-15. We were checking out the missiles. And there were some interesting tests. One in particular was, I received the mission. I was going to be in an F-16, backseat of the F-16. And we were going to test the guns on the Raptor. And we needed a moving target, live rounds. And what we were going to do in the F-16 is we were going to drag a target. So it had a moving target so many yards behind us. And the Raptor comes in and we go into a turn. So it kicks out the target, and it fires upon it. And when I first heard this, I was like, wait, these are, excuse me, live rounds? Yes. And your job is to make sure that the Raptor is not pointing at us, but at the target. I'm like, Roger that. Got
no
it.
Pressure.
No problem. So I was able, man, some of the things that I was able to see in that program was amazing and very top level. Congress was trying to kill that program because it was running over its budget. So we had the Secretary of the Air Force, we had congressional people just looking at us, and I would write reports. So we would run the tests, I would assess the tests, and either it was good, not good, send it to the Secretary of the Air Force. As a captain, my reports were going to Secretary of State or Secretary of the Air Force in Congress.
All right. So then after that season.
Oh, gosh. So that was kind of not in the middle. Before that, I had taught at the Air Force Academy in the math department. So as assistant professor, as the beginning portion of my beginning years as a captain. And then I did the flight test. Then I went to Eglin Air Force Base, where I was continue to do operational tests with on aircraft. After that, I was accepted into the PhD program, got the PhD. So that was sponsored through the Air Force. Then I went to the Pentagon, and I was the senior economist there. And what I would do is the Air Force would receive taskers from Congress. Here you get the politics, the big money. So Congress would like to present policies and how they can change the military. We would receive that. There was two PhDs. I was one of them. And so we'd do the financial analysis, or is this even feasible? Then we'd arm up our leadership with an answer, and they would respond to Congress. So big money, big programs, lots.
Well, and I like this because so you're, you know, not going to the U.S. Senate, you're in the Colorado Senate, but the process here is somewhat similar, I would think, in terms of the legislature is, you know, crafting legislation, making appropriations, and on the receiving side of that. So in your instance, in your experience, the Department of Defense, you're at the Pentagon on behalf of the U.S. Air Force, looking at the economics of what Congress is proposing. Seems like in the state of Colorado, that's kind of a gap in terms of anybody actually caring about the economics of what's being proposed and appropriated.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, if you've seen some of these bills that they're passing, don't you think we need an economist? The deficit, the
somewhere burden, in the state of Colorado government, sure.
That Coloradans are feeling. I mean, lawyers are a dime a dozen. Let's get an economist in.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and it's not. We'll get to the special election here in a second, because I want to talk a little bit about, you know, 2022 and the lawsuits and not belabor it, but just so people know, kind of what your arc towards actually being the senator for District 9 has been. I think it's important, and I think it's a great story. But in terms of it, you know, it doesn't appear that there is an economist that's involved. The this in the state of Colorado, and particularly inside of the Republican Party, feels very much like a popularity contest most of the time. And it's like, oh, well, we're voting between the lesser of two evils. And part of what I want people to understand about your victory is you have a depth of experience and academic knowledge, practical experience in government, but also the academic knowledge, but not only that, because you have the interplay experience as well. When does the legislative branch at the points where the legislative branch and the executive branch, you know, cross over and intermingle and play together, check and balance each other? You have hands-on practical experience of how that's supposed to work and what it's supposed to look like. And I think it's important for people to know. I think we should all have higher standards when we're considering who we're selecting to go represent us in these, you know, government buildings, whether it is at the state or the federal level. You should have the expectation of competence and experience. And, you know, yes, values alignment is probably the most important thing, but it's not a popularity contest, and allowing it to become a popularity contest, which I think has a lot to do with the money involved, right? The money involved in politics is it so much of that money goes to messaging and marketing to make people like you, to make people think you're the person. I just love that person, right? Mm-hmm. That's going to go sit under the dome and make decisions that affect all of our lives. I care what they look like. I care what their sound bites sound like. I care what their top three marquee issues. I don't really even ever think about whether or not they're competent and experienced and aware of how it works. That seems to be the mainstream mindset in the state of Colorado about elections generally, right? Popularity contest. And you ran for office in 2022. Let's finish up if there's anything in your background you think people should know. And then let's talk about kind of what the in-between period from 2020 to now has been.
So I'll finish up the background. So I have a very technical, right, math and economics. That's the unique part. But also before I went into the Air Force, I was a park ranger. Some people don't know that, but I add that in because I grew up in the timber industry, and I know about what good forest management looks like to save our forests and our environment. So that's a little side note that some people go, oh, really? That's interesting.
Which
it seems, it seems to conflict with the technical part of my background.
But it's super important and relevant because in the state of Colorado, 40% of our budget is federal funding. And a lot of that is BLM, right? It's Bureau of Land Management, Natural Resources, all of that kind of stuff. And there's interplay there as well in terms of the state and federal government and our forests and our, you know, conservation practices, sustainability practices, water, you know, policy and legislation. So again, you know, great relevant hands-on experience that you have. So let's talk about like what 2022, take us through the election, and Karen, jump in at any time. I know you will, but
do you want me to say why I got into politics?
Yeah.
Real quickly. So I retired in 2020 from the Air Force, and thought I was going to lead a quiet life, travel and just horseback riding, have, you know, my little ranch and just a quiet life. And then the 2020 election happened and I encountered some irregularities, personal irregularities. So my daughter, 2 years prior, she got her license. We go to the DMV. Mr. DMV says, would you like to register to vote? She said, my daughter says, yes. Now she's sitting right next to me and he goes, well, what party affiliation? She's like, well, Republican, of course. And I'm like, yeah, at a girl, smiling. Then fast forward to the 2020 election. She goes to vote in person. We all do. And I'm meaning my family. And they say, oh, you're unaffiliated. Excuse me?
And this is her first vote, right?
Yes. And they changed her party affiliation without her authorization, which is a crime. Now, this, I know there's a law that was happening. It happened after my daughter got her license, which would, whenever you go and register, everyone's automatically unaffiliated. No, this happened before that law. And about 3 months later, I found out that it happened to me too, because I was registering to be a precinct leader. I was getting involved in the local level. And I have been a Republican since I was 18. I know I moved around in the military. So I was registered in California as Republican, registered in Florida, Republican. I get to Colorado, I register as Republican. But after when I was putting in my paperwork for precinct leader, they switched it.
To unaffiliated?
To unaffiliated.
And without my
authorization.
Yeah. And this was kind of made, I think both of you will remember this. This was kind of made a statewide outrage point after the 2022 assembly, because Stanley Thorne threw in his hat for AG. Yep. And he won, if I recall correctly, the vote. Yep. At the assembly. And then the Republican Party said, oh, no, you didn't register as a Republican in time. And his assertion was that they had changed his affiliation. Yep. And, you know, we're not allowed to know. We're not allowed to know what the truth is. It an error? Is it a code glitch? Is there erroneous code running in the databases that's flipping people's registrations within the voter rolls? Is there a nefarious practice at play that is, you know, changing people to meet some sort of numbers threshold for some, you know, plot? We don't get to know. We're supposed to always assume that it's just a human error and it doesn't have any meaningful impact, but you're never allowed to explore whether or not that's true. It's this default belief that you have to hold.
Yeah. And after the canvassing for the Colorado canvassing report, we discovered that my daughter and I were not the only ones. And
yeah,
we found 8% irregularities. We knocked on over 9,000 doors. So if you're talking about
statistics, and eight's the low end. It's 8 to 11, right? And some of those are in it. So four counties are included in the report upon which the 8 to 11% assertion is made. And those four counties are the ones that reach the statistical threshold to be able to make assertions for the state, because they had enough touch points, enough doors knocks. And as Linda said, we knocked almost 10,000 doors in the state of Colorado across those four counties. And
that report was only about the process, not even the machines.
Yeah.
Oh, when you start adding total. The machines.
Yeah.
We've got issues.
Well,
we don't have the gold standard,
right? Just the four counties we did, not the entire 64 counties.
64 so counties.
Imagine that with a range and percentage for between 8 and 11% on just four counties. That's high. Can you imagine?
Oh, that'll flip a race. Yeah.
Yeah, 8 to 11% will definitely has the potential to flip a race. And those anomalies were things like party affiliation is wrong on the rolls. This isn't a house. Yeah. How would you
even receive? How many lots did we? I remember I found one that was on the corner. It was on the corner. There was a liquor store. We had a widow. She had been
Arby's in Douglas County.
14 years. And she was still getting her husband's ballot, and she even took it to the clerk and recorder and was through the years, you know, trying to get him off the voter roll. For 10 years she was still getting a ballot for him.
Yeah. And that was actually something pretty common that we found, was that there are people who their loved ones have passed and they're still getting their ballots, and they have asked repeatedly for their dead loved one to be taken off the rolls.
Yep.
And they're not. And why this becomes really kind of weird and should be looked upon in the state of Colorado is we see in the data Jeff put together what I've always called the wave chart, which is the buildup of the voter rolls before the election and the culling. It's like a straight line down right after the election that removes people from the voter rolls. And their answer to this is, well, that's our regular maintenance process. And we're just removing voters from the voter rolls after the election. We do that as a normal part of the process to clean up the voter rolls. The problem with that excuse is that a lot of the people that we've found that people that they have removed in that culling that happens after just voted in the election prior. So the build up to the election, people that voted are being cut off. But as Linda said, the relative of the dead loved one has to beg and beg and beg to get their person off the voter rolls after they pass, and they still don't come off. But people that voted are removed right after. That's a problem that breaks their argument about the hygiene of the voter rolls, but you know, election deniers, so you're not allowed to talk about it.
So as I started seeing this and receiving more hardcore evidence, I mean, these are affidavits. People can stand in court on these facts that we've been finding. We started fighting Jenna Griswold would be putting up her permanent rules or working with legislators and taking the power of the local level, people, our elections, and consolidating it to her. And so I began giving testimony.
That's Senate Bill 22-153 that Linda is talking about.
Yeah. And so I began fighting or giving testimony against some of these bills and just tyrannical. They're taking the local power away. That those are our elections. Those aren't hers. And once I was at the Capitol, I was also seeing the other testimonies and the other bills, and I was just blown out of the water as to these bills are unconstitutional. So then my scope all of a sudden went from election integrity to everything that was happening, and I started getting involved. I ended up throwing my name in 2022, name in the hat. It was like 5 days.
For this seat, right?
For this seat, yes. Yeah. It was 5 days before the assembly.
Yeah.
For Senate District 9 assembly. And I just felt the calling of the Lord. And a little background, 3 days after the 2020 election, I had a dream. I know this sounds weird, but I felt God calling me to the arena of politics. In arena, number one, I didn't want to go in. I had no desire. I wanted to retire a quiet life. But when I saw all the grievances against our Constitution, I'm like, mm-mm. You know, I was in the military. I served to protect and defend the Constitution, and not on my watch. So I'm jumping back in, even though I don't have a uniform on. I'm fighting for it. I love that document. So. It was 5 days before the assembly. At the time, Senator Lundeen, he was the incumbent, and I called him up. I said, just to let you know, heads up, I'm gonna run against you. And so at the assembly, I gave my speech. My daughter nominated me. My daughter is so petite. She just looks like she's about 12 years old. She was at the time my co-precinct leader. She marches up and does an outstanding job of nominating me. And I gave my speech and I ended up winning by 52% and unknown. I think that says a lot about what the people want.
And Lundeen had petitioned, right?
No, he
just go through?
He
met the threshold to make it onto the ballot.
You know what? Now I'm thinking about it. I wonder, I'd have to go back and look. I'd have to brush off the cobwebs on that one.
So in Colorado, for folks that don't know, there's two ways, and they're trying to change this. They're trying to make jungle primaries and change all sorts of things about how we do elections. But right now, Linda, you know this better than I do, so correct me if I'm wrong. Within the Republican Party, there's two ways you can get on the ballot. You can go through assembly, which is the state process where the candidates are nominated and the voting members of the party decide who gets the shares of the vote. And there's how many
leaders.
Voting,
it's
how
it's,
many voting members in the party are there? They're like 4,000 or something.
Oh gosh. I don't know, but
it's not 4,000. It's like 400 maybe.
Oh, in the, well, in Senate District 9, like this last vote that we had, it was strictly precinct leaders and representatives that are, live in your
right, but
your
state district. Assembly is what I'm what, oh, what I'm specifically
yeah, I think
talking
it is 4,000.
About. Is it four? Yeah, okay.
I wanna so say that's about
between right. 3,000 and 4,000 yeah. credentialed members that can come in and vote for things like statewide candidates, down to the specific group of voting members for like Senate District 9.
Correct.
And that's only the precinct leaders and bonus members and people with voting rights within the party within that Senate district. And there's all these elections that happen around the time of assembly. I remember this was when Ken Buck was defeated by an unknown floor nomination and Bob Lewis. It was the same election that we're talking about. The 2022 primary was overwhelming turnout, if I recall correctly, for the Republican primary in 2022. The number of people that had taken voting member, there used to be so many vacancies, right? There was, it was like across the state that these voting positions stayed empty. And this is kind of the precinct strategy that Dan Schultz yes. talks about. But Colorado was doing that almost immediately after the 2020 election, working on that within the Republican Party. And I'm not a Republican, but I covered this, right? Mm-hmm. Like Peg Cage was adamant after the 2020 election and after January 6, 2021, because people stopped gathering in big numbers at that point and went more coffee shop and, you know, like smaller gatherings in their counties. And Peg Cage was going around telling everybody, you have to take these voting positions. These voting positions in the party are empty and they want to keep them empty. They're not going to tell you about them. They're not going to, publicize everywhere, hey, come take voting positions inside of the party, because the establishment benefits from them being empty. They want to keep them empty. And in 2022, I don't remember the exact numbers, but it was a massive turnout for what they had been seeing in the years prior. This was also the one that we've talked about with the clickers
that were ridiculous.
End of life technology clickers and things. So that's the one way you can get on the ballot. And then the other way is you can petition.
Yes.
So you have, signed petitions, you pay circulators usually to go and you get all that, and you don't have to face the people in the party at all. You can just be on the ticket as a Republican. Like, this is the Pam Anderson case, right? Pam Anderson did not go through assembly. Tina Peters and Mike O'Donnell did go through assembly. Mm-hmm. This is for the Secretary of State race in 2022. And Pam Anderson is the former executive director of CTCL, Zuckerbucks. Her mother-in-law, Norma Anderson, was the lead plaintiff in Anderson versus Griswold, which was the President Trump 14th Amendment case. These are political monster, political dynasty type family, political monster type families that are very committed to maintaining the status quo of not wanting the people involved in party dynamics and not wanting the people's voice to be heard in, candidate selection and policy and platform decisions and things like that. That's how the Colorado Republican Party has been run from 2010 to 2020, certainly.
Yeah. And we, the people, have taken our hands off the wheel. But yeah. Now, as people are starting to wake up, they're realizing, oh, I didn't even realize I had all this precinct leader. It's like your vote on steroids.
Yeah.
Instead of just voting in November and you have no say with the candidate, you far earlier in the game, you actually have a say in the candidates.
And this process is different state to state, right? There are different state party processes and different state laws that govern how parties can select candidates, how people can get on the ballot. And like I said, they're trying to change it here. They're trying to make it jungle primaries and ranked choice voting. And we have to stop. We have to oppose this with every fiber of our being, Colorado, because we'll never have the ability to audit an election ever again. And it's just pinky promise with, technology companies and people like Jenna Griswold, which is should not be pinky promising with Jenna Griswold. She has not earned it. Like, you might've said a few years ago, okay, Jenna, I'll pinky promise with you, but she lies a lot. And also she investigates herself when she gets caught and then decides that it's fine. And so Pinky, you should not be the takeaway of this rant is you should not be pinky promising with Jenna Griswold because she has forfeited that level of trust. All right. So 2022, you get on the ballot, 52% of the vote, I think you said.
At the assembly.
Yep. And your opposition in that primary is Paul Lundeen. Mm-hmm. Correct?
Yes.
What happens?
So we go into the primary and on election night at 7 o'clock, it was around 7 o'clock, they declared me as the winner. And that lasted for, I think it was around either 10 or 11 o'clock at night. And then all of a sudden it flipped to, it flipped. So it had Senator Lundeen as the winner.
Yeah.
That was a Fox News report. And so then there was.
Which happened to, there was, I don't know that all of the races flipped, but there's down, there was a lot, there was this movement in 2022 of America First regular people, highly qualified, capable, competent people like you, but regular people, not political party people that have come up in the party and it's their turn kind of people. Cause there was a lot of those people in 2022, right? Eli Bremmer, it's my turn kind of thing is what we saw in a lot of the candidates. Yeah. They didn't say it's my turn, right? It was the vibe. It was the vibe. This is our party. We made it into what it is. And the people in the party are like, well, yeah, but what it is sucks because you guys just like to be in the minority position and you raise a bunch of money, you throw parties. And then when nothing happens, you're like, Democrats, nothing we can do, but you don't fight them on the issues that matter. When it came to elections, they were all like, oh no, gold standard, free and fair. Everything's amazing. There was a lot of that, but there was this movement in across Colorado coming out of that precinct strategy kind of execution, right? People taking voting positions across. Then a lot of people ran for office. And Linda, you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I think going back to 2020 through the 2022 midterm, 2024 election, of all of the activists that have run election integrity activists, election deniers, of all of the election deniers that have run for office, I believe that you're the only one that has actually attained the seat. Am I correct about that?
Well, you have Ken DeGraff. But
did he run as an election denier?
Yeah, he doubts...
I know he talks about it. I'm a huge fan of Ken DeGraff. I'm not belittling it. I just didn't remember him running as an election.
But he didn't. I have to remember if he even had an opponent. So that would make a difference why he got through. But as far as what you're saying with an opponent, yeah, I'm the only one.
Yeah. So the primary happens, the votes flip at night, and then we end up with a recount and a to touch on that a little bit.
Oh yeah. So, and it's, this is what a journey I've been on as far as learning, on so many levels, election integrity and of course the other, unconstitutional bills. But when we get into the recount, I am actually in the counting room and I'm watching everything. Now I've been in, we call it a SCIF, and when in, you know, classified, programs in the military and you work in a secure area. I know about national security and how to keep, I mean, I'm not the expert, but I know enough to be dangerous. And so I'm looking at these systems, and as the IT person for all of these Dominion systems is.
And that's a Dominion person, right? Or
no, no, this is
you're talking about the El Paso County person.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And so.
Because they had a Dominion. So she's talking about being at the recount. I was there too. I wasn't there for the whole time, but I was there for a while, but I wasn't in the counting room because I'm in a counting room. I was on the outside looking in through the glass and watching them change historical batch labels and watching seals on boxes that were broken. And they're like, oh, it's no big deal. Like it was. So they were please stuffing, continue.
They didn't even break the seal. They were just opening the boxes and putting things. Anyway, so I'm seeing the boot ups, and I asked the IT person. I said, so, you know, before they said there was no Wi-Fi capability. We of course, we found out that's a lie.
Yeah.
And then they said, oh, well, they're not radiating. You know, they're turned off.
It's actually the week before the primary that they admitted that. So the week before the primary was, I believe it was June 24th, 2022. And the primary was June 28th, if I'm not mistaken. But that week, the Secretary of State's office sent out a weekend brief to all of the clerks that said, it says security reminder in a section in Jenna's weekend brief. It's like, hey, guys, we just need you to like check in the middle of the election event periodically, you know, just come back and check periodically and make sure that your machines that are Wi-Fi capable don't accidentally reconnect in the middle of the election. And this was a pretty big deal because they've been telling us for 2 years, our machines can't connect to the internet. And even if they have a modem or capability inside of them, it's been disabled. And even if it hasn't, they're air gapped. There's no way that our machines can connect to the internet. And then just 2 years later, right before the primary, they're like, hey, clerks, you know, we're giving you these instructions from Dominion Democracy Suite on how to check and do this. Please check and make sure that your devices, your election devices, don't reconnect to the internet in the middle of the election event. I was like, this is huge. This is huge news. This is going to blow the lid off this whole thing.
Right.
And everybody was like, well, of course they connect to the internet, but they weren't though. And there's no evidence that they were. And I'm like, but you said they couldn't. Nobody cared.
Yeah. Then they downplay it.
This is so, all the same time that Linda was running. So like, yeah, this is our shared history, Linda.
So this is where my test analysis starts kicking in, right? The test analysis that I did with, it was also a test, analyst for satellites. That was in my early years.
Did you work with Sean?
No,
Air Force testing.
Yeah, and we say I've got space stink on me, so I've worked with satellites. But anyway, so working and looking at the process, and I'm taking copious notes. And so when we get to the boot ups, I ask the IT the tech guy, so how do you confirm that the Wi-Fi and Bluetooth is not operating? He goes, oh, he's so excited. Let me show you. And so we see the startup, I think it's the BIOS startup. And he says, see this little icon? And it says Wi-Fi, Bluetooth. He goes, see, it's grayed out. And I'm looking at him like, one line of code can change that color. That means nothing. And I'm just stupefied, like, you're an IT guy. You know this. Yeah. That's what you're going off of? I don't feel confident as a voter. And then there was another thing. So we go through the process. It's a rescan, not a recount. And by the way, that was a violation of the law. And we'll get to that one.
And she charged a ton of money for it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we also had to pay for the Dominion representative that was in the other room.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
who had to run in and deal with the issue with the logic and accuracy test, if I recall correctly, because the logic and accuracy test for that rescan had a 54% error rate on the first time through the Friday before the rescan started.
So another thing is once they get counts, they have a thumb drive and they take it from the Dominion system outside of the room and upload it to what I believe is this, I can't remember, is the Secretary of State's office. I don't know. But anyway, my point is this. Here comes my national security military. I'm like, you're taking a thumb drive and passing it back and forth. And they're like, well, it's a coded one, so it's okay. And I'm like, no.
Who coded it?
I don't know.
It's like,
that's another question.
Oh, you election denier, why would you ask that basic chain of custody question?
Yeah. So anyway, my point is there's other things and nuances that's just like the credibility of this, you know, gold standard is just like, you have got to be kidding me. No way.
And what did they charge you for that rescan?
Oh my gosh.
I know Tina Peters, it was like $200,000 that they charged her because it was statewide.
Because that was statewide.
Yeah. But yours was just an SD9 one.
I can't remember. Let's just say it was around $21,000.
Yeah.
And
each candidate had a burden like that. So there were five, right?
Uh-huh.
Five candidates that were recounting races. And Tina Peters had the heaviest burden because it had to be recounted statewide.
Correct.
But then the rest of you had something like $20,000 to $30,000, if I recall correctly, each.
I had to give myself a loan. I mean, I'm just a grassroots, and as far as finances, I'm just the underdog.
No,
right?
Dark money funding.
Yeah. In fact, if you were to do a Google on Senator Lundin and me, there's like the very first round. Like underdog challenging incumbent, and it said like he had $80,000 and I had maybe $2,000. it was comical, but anyway, so a lot of the candidates couldn't afford that high threshold. Now, after the dust settled and some candidates had to drop out of the recount because they couldn't afford it, then that recount was divvied up evenly between the candidates, and it dropped to, I don't know, my memory is getting foggy on this, I don't know, let's say about 12 or 13,000, 15,000-ish, around there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's an important point, because there were more candidates that mm-hmm. wanted to rescan and were being challenged. I remember, I think Lindsay Moore was one of them mm-hmm. who couldn't make the financial hurdle. And that, you know, that seems to be a threat to democracy, that a candidate that potentially won can't have a recount because they can't meet the financial burden associated right. with a recount.
It totally kicks out.
Especially when everybody's recounting already.
We, the people, I mean, we don't have, so it pretty much kicks out those people, right? And yeah. only the wealthy can go through an election. Is that what you want?
And that's what happens with ranked choice voting. So, you know, quick side note, standing on a soapbox is, first of all, the jungle primary that they're talking about removes party assembly candidate selection. And it is just people that can petition. So petitioning onto the ballot is a rich man's game. There is a financial barrier there, whereas assembly allows anybody to run for office. Anybody can go directly to the voting members of the party and make their case for their candidacy. If we do this jungle primary thing that they keep proposing in the state of Colorado, that goes out, and it is your financial, you have a initial financial hurdle regardless. And then with the ranked choice voting, it's another vendor landscape. It's proprietary code again, and it's completely unauditable. You cannot within the time thresholds that they give you statutorily to challenge elections and to ask questions about election results, there is no way that you can audit a ranked choice vote decided. Because the ranked choice voting, for folks that are, you know, maybe not fully read in on it, it's, you know, you rank on your vote, you rank what order you prefer the candidates in, and then the algorithms and the machine do all of that calculation, kick out who didn't get enough, the next round happens, kick out, and this is all happening inside of the machines, and the people have nothing to do with it.
Yep.
Yeah, it's taking the problems we have with the black box now and like codifying them in terms of, yeah, you guys might not like this proprietary code thing, but we're going to put it on steroids and you're going to just have to trust us. And everywhere that they do ranked choice voting, they end up rolling it back, or to the people want to roll it back. They're fighting this in Alaska right now, trying to roll back ranked choice voting. And that's how Lisa Murkowski keeps getting elected. She's a big proponent of ranked choice voting, and the people of Alaska don't like her, but, you know, she stays in the seat. So
it's crazy. So, yeah, right. we filed a meaning the candidates filed a lawsuit against the Secretary of State because the statute was violated. And it was a black and white case. I mean, it should have been a slam dunk. It gets sent to the courts and the judge smacked it down. And that's where my drive in trying to fix what's happening just kicks it up, because I'm the injustice of it all. What does it say when the executive branch can violate law and the judicial branch is not going to do anything about it? And this was, like I said, it was a black and white case. I mean, you could, you know, confirm that. And that was stunning to me. It should have been a hand count. It says it right there. And then in November, so what would that be, about 5 months later, the same thing happened in Lauren Boebert's race. She had to have a recount. And again, it became a rescan. It violated the law. There was a lawsuit. It was smacked down. Wasn't even looked at. And then I think it was that following year.
Well, hang on a second. On the Lauren Boebert one, she could have, this is like some of my beef with Boebert. She could have forced that recount. The margins were close enough that she could have forced that all the way through. But Adam Frisch pulled out of the race. Oh. And she, you know, he was like, I'm not going to contest this anymore. And she was like, oh, okay, fine. Like, I think she should have forced it and gone through with it to get the exposure and what's happening in the elections and how do these inexplicable things keep happening. We're not 50-50 in a lot of these places. She was just like, oh no, cool, I won. Off to DC again. And then she became unelectable. And so they moved her, they meaning the party establishment, moved her into CD4. And now she's my congresswoman. So
yeah. So and correct me if I'm wrong, it was the following year. Our Secretary of State worked with the legislature and made what she did that was illegal at the time, now legal. They changed the verbiage.
Well, it's Tina Peters, not Lauren Boebert.
What's that?
That's Tina Peters you're talking about, right?
No. I'm talking about the Secretary of State has been working with the legislature and changing laws that takes the power away, that takes the hand count away.
Yeah, and that was in the wake of the Tina Peters images. Yes. That's the Colorado Election Security Act 22153 that had a massive public turnout against it in opposition to it.
And there was other
and
bills.
They just don't care. So they just do whatever they want, no matter what the people say.
There was another, I can't remember if it was a permanent rule or if it was actually a law where it forced everyone, I say everyone, every county to use the machines.
Back in 2015, 2016. That was Wayne Williams that mandated Dominion across the state of Colorado, and Garfield and Douglas sued, and they got the opportunity to use a different vendor, okay, and they used Clear Ballot. But they did lock in as part of the Colorado Election Security Act in 2022, they locked in the authorities over the machines and code. So it's like the counties are the holders of the machines. They have custody of the machines, but they can't touch them. They can't image them. They can't do anything to them. All of that power is in the Secretary of State's hands after 22153. Prior to it, they had a statutory duty to preserve election records, and the vendors and the Secretary of State would tell them how to do that, but it wasn't unlawful for them to do it a different way, say the way Dallas Schroeder did it in Albert County. He did it in a way that was not unlawful, and that's why he was not treated like Tina Peters, because Tina Peters' circumstances were very specific, and what she was convicted of and what she's in prison for is not imaging the machines in 2022 or 2021 when she did it. Because it was lawful for her to do that then. She's in prison for 9 years for lying to Jenna Griswold and for other officials. That's the crux of the felonies against her, is that she made a misrepresentation to officials. And even though she herself was an official, they found that unlawful. But what they did, and this is why it made me think of Tina Peters, Linda, when you said that, is that in her trial, they were basically trying her as though the Colorado Election Security Act was law at the time of what she did, but it wasn't. Mm-mm. It was this cobbled together old statutes plus Jenna Griswold's COVID emergency rules in 2021 that in, you know, August of 2021, we're still operating under COVID emergency rules for elections, which should have blown everybody's mind to begin with, but they really loved their power and they didn't want to let it go. That kind of cobbled together, they actually qualified Caleb Thornton from the Secretary of State's office as an expert in that trial to talk about how arbitrary COVID-19 emergency rules become law. And it's basically like Tina violated this law, even though it wasn't law at the time that Tina Peters' conduct took place. The whole thing is so screwed up, man. All right. So tell us, because I really, we're gonna have you on for 15 minutes.
I know.
Minutes,
I'm like
an hour. I know. We could talk all day. Talk about the special election. What led to these the circumstances where you are now the senator elect for Senate District 9 in the state of Colorado?
All right. So I am also the chair of Senate District 9. And so it was the 9th of June. I'm actually in jury duty. We take a break and all of a sudden I look at my phone and my phone's blowing up. People are saying, I'm seeing on the social media that Senator Lundeen has resigned. And I'm like, I'm the chair. I have a statute obligation to fill that vacancy. So I had to reach out and confirm. And once I confirmed, it's like I had to organize a meeting. And also I felt the calling from God, throw your name in the hat. And so such a time as this, it's, I don't know, looking back, I think, I truly believe that God was sharpening me for this moment. And I threw my name in the hat. Plus I'm organizing the meeting. So I've got two hats, right? One as chair and one as a candidate. And I'm, it was, we only had 30 days. The bylaws say 30 days, or else if you don't fill the vacancy, the governor will fill it. And we don't want
that. We're not doing that.
So this was a quick turn, 3 weeks. I sent out the notification and it was ready, set, go, and just roll with it. And so, yeah, we had our election on Monday and I am very grateful, humbled, just to be representing we the people.
So one of the things that, you know, I'll just speak for the heart of the people, right? Somebody we like gets elected to a seat and they go into that center of power and they lose sight of why they were sent there and, you know, become a part of the machine. Yeah. And all of a sudden they're equivocating on the things that, you know, matter to the people who were so adamant about that sent them there. Now we're talking about the Colorado legislature, which is, you know, they say it's not a super majority for Democrats anymore, but it pretty much is. They can pretty much do whatever the hell they want here. What is the job as you would define it with that ecosystem, right? Any legislation that a Republican senator is able to author and get through and get passed is, I would argue, probably not something that we want in Colorado because of the level of Democrat, and the Democrats are run by the DSA here, the Democrat Socialist of America people, the level of compromise to get something like part of a Trump agenda type of thing to get that passed. That is, I would argue that's an unattainable outcome. So what is the job as you see it?
Well, like you said, I mean, this is politics. So reaching across the aisle and establishing bipartisanship, what that's doing is, you're trading off. You know, I'll vote for your bill if you vote for mine, Republican, Democrat. And that might have worked 20 years ago when we had more Republicans and the Democrats weren't so extreme. But you take that strategy in today's battlefield where we have less Republicans and the Democrats are more extreme and their bills are more extreme. It's like, what are you trading off? You might have a fantastic bill, but at what cost? That's the freedoms of we the people. You're trading my freedoms to get a good bill. Is it worth it?
Yeah.
No. The magnitude of negative impact on we the people could be even more significant. So I don't see, we got to try a different strategy. We got to do a different strategy. I don't see how that's even feasible with the dynamics of the Democrats right now. What we are called to do is to expose the darkness. I remember either it was a couple years ago or last year, I was watching Representative Scott Bottoms, Representative Ken DeGraff, and Brandi Bradley, and Stephanie Luck. They were just getting beat up on some of these bills, and they're trying to get their bills out. Of course, they just kept getting smacked down. And one of the things that I firmly believe, I told them, I go, your goal is not to pass your bills, get your bills passed. Your goal is not to, I mean, you can try to minimize their bad bills, but they're overwhelming us. What you need to focus on is what I think is a key is to expose the evil and let it magnify, because there's so many voters out there that have no clue what's going on at the Capitol. They have no clue the level of evil. I would even talk to my conservative friends and explain what was going on, and they're like, really? And then I would send them a link saying, watch this video at the 5-minute mark, and they'll come back to me and go, they're just stunned. I never realized it was so bad. So that's going to be, I know this is not your typical response, but I'm going to expose the evil.
The right answer, though.
And why is that? Why is that important? If we get, there's Democrats now that are getting upset, especially after 1312.
Yeah.
You get a movement of people that are sick and tired, and they're being financially crushed because now that's impacting them. Now we can get them to a point where they're going to engage. So we expose it, we get a groundswell, and we need numbers. That's going to bring in the numbers. That's where we're, you know, I'm going to be solo. Well, you know, as far as.
I want to get Karen in here and get her feedback. Spetzel in the chat says, based on vacancy procedures in Colorado, do you have to run in a special election this November?
No. So there were two bills that were put forward by Republicans. There was county level and there's state level. The county level, yes. So in El Paso County CCD 5, county commissioner district 5, there became a vacancy. They had their vacancy meeting, they filled the vacancy. Now in that particular situation in November, they're going to have a special election at the cost of the taxpayer. But for my race, that didn't come into play. That was a different bill. And so I will finish out Senator Lundin
through 26
and then there'll be an election.
Yeah. Awesome. Karen, you're on mute. And what folks need to realize, like the three of us, so we were all USCIP. Linda was El Paso. Karen was Jeffco. I was Douglas County. Like this is our share. I'm so proud of you.
It's been, Linda, quite the journey. Like,
yeah,
right?
it really has. But Karen, I want to get you in here because folks are accusing me of not letting you speak, as if I could do such a thing, as if I could stop you if you wanted to speak. Please go ahead.
I'm learning a lot. Yeah, this has been a long and perilous journey. And Linda, congratulations, because we met, one of the events down in El Paso County. So actually, I met you at a assembly as well. So. Yeah, that 2022 assembly was huge. Wanted to give big props for that one. Colorado is, I believe the Democrats, the communists, they have taken it too far, which is what they do. They go off a cliff and then they have to be reined in, but it has to be by the citizens. The communists are not numerous, they're just louder, and they have more backing because they have more people with money who support them. As we know, the Rocky Mountain heist is a real thing. So there, Colorado, if the elections were free and fair, is blood red. And I know that based on the people that I talk to, the signs that I see. When you take little capital, Wash Park, Cap Hill, Denver, out of it, this state does not agree with what has been going on. And I think
if you were to engage the, I heard a stat, and I'm probably going to get it wrong, but it was really low, about 30 or 40% of the Christians voted in Colorado.
Yep.
It's like, if you can engage them,
what's their excuse?
And the Hispanic vote, because all of their beliefs are really Republican,
they're very conservative.
Yeah. So if you were to awaken and educate, I firmly believe we could flip Colorado.
They're doing it. Yeah. I went to an event last Saturday in Weld County. They're doing it.
Yeah, I agree with that.
They're doing it.
Yeah. So. Well, you know, my father's side is Hispanic, and I mean, it's like, oh, we vote Democrat, and it's like, do you know what they're voting for now? I don't think that people really understand.
It's information.
It's very strange.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the problem with Colorado is that more than 50% of the state is unaffiliated, and that's in engaged voters as well. And a big part of that is that the Republican Party has stopped meaning anything. They've stopped standing for anything that resembles, and I'm talking, you know, 2010 to 2020. So 2010 is like my favorite example. It's the midterms during the Tea Party. And the midterms during the Tea Party, the Republican Party in the state of Colorado almost became a minority party. They almost dropped below 10% of the vote, which would make them a minority party in the state, because the America First, and this was, you know, it was Tea Party. It wasn't a MAGA or America First yet, but it was a forerunner movement. They went third party on the governor race. And in the governor race, if you drop below 10%, you become a minority party in the state. And the Republican Party got 11% in that vote. And Tom Tancredo, who ran on the American Constitution Party ticket with a very America First platform, got like 30-something% of the vote. It was definitively where the people were. But instead of correcting the problem, the Republican Party doubled down and demonized the Tea Party, kind of ostracized. There's still a couple good Tea Parties, right? Like, I think the Arapahoe County Tea Party is still going, but that happened all over the country. It wasn't just in Colorado, but in Colorado it was particularly pronounced because they just doubled down on the wrong way. The Republican Party did rebuilding that trust. It hasn't been a priority for them, and so what we've seen is the middle grow. You see this, you know, 50% of the state, even people involved in politics, are either third party or unaffiliated at all.
Yep. And that's the problem. I claim the Republican Party. I consider myself a Frederick Douglass Republican based on the obvious. So the people need to be engaged.
The obvious is that she's Black, in case people missed it.
You went there. It's good. I don't care. So know that the left is not just, I mean, the wind is out of their sails, but they're still putting on events.
Yeah.
I had to just go and see what was going on with one of them last week. They are the things that they believe and the things that they are telling people is
shocking.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
But they're doing it.
Yeah.
And this is what I said at a Republican fundraiser. You people are not messaging. You're not messaging. People have become disinterested. They're sitting on their couch. Trump is elected. We don't have to do anything. Yeah, that's why this 1312, which we did get a lot of support for that. I appreciate everybody who came against that. But still, there are still people who are completely disinterested for one reason or another. Oh, there's so much infighting. Yeah, there is. We've got a lot of problems here. Oh, this person, as you guys mentioned earlier, well, it's my turn. We've lost our way, and that has to change, because while we're trying to navigate these rough waters, they're still telling good, hardworking, simple American folk, you're gonna die. This healthcare bill, his big beautiful bill, you're all gonna die. Yeah. And they put people in at the podium with these poor sob stories, and oh my gosh, he's just the NIH, he's just dropping the NIH and my daughter. These people, it's all emotions for them.
Yes,
we
it
can
is.
Counter this with fact, and hey, how have you been living for the last 4 years? Have you been able to start a business? Have you been able to expand your business? There are things that we can do and talk about, but get people engaged, because I'm telling you, the left is still doing it.
Well, that's just one of the things I've learned in door knocking and talking with the voters, is they're being crushed financially. It's just so... And it's making the connection, you know, that's due to policies. Yeah. And here's why.
No, it's Trump's fault.
I know. Oh. But yeah. But when you have things like 1312 and was it SB003? That was the gun, gun grab. Mm-hmm. There's people, voters, that are not going to engage until we hit rock bottom. I mean, yeah, and that's a fact. And I don't think we're at rock bottom yet, but we're getting pretty close.
Yeah.
That they're now people are getting irate. They can't afford things. You know, their kids can't afford things. The American dream is slipping away. And it's like, well, guess what? You've got to engage. You've got to engage. So that's
and have solutions.
Yep.
Right? Like the causes that lead to kids coming up today, like my kids, right? My oldest is 21 years old. The idea of him being able to afford a home is so kind of so out of reach mm-hmm. because of how messed up the market is yep. and because of how messed up the path is and the, you know, barriers to entry for kids today. Those are systemic root cause things that have to be fixed. And Republicans need to get serious about having solutions for that. I think President Trump does. And that's at the federal level, right? But down at the state level, Republicans, you know, it's like, well, we have to protect Tabor. Yeah. We all support you in that. Hold the line on Tabor. Protect the taxpayer bill of rights because the DSA definitely wants to blow it up. Lorena Garcia every time she opens her damn mouth. Yeah. So hold the line on that. But also we need solutions to the affordability crisis. We need
Well, I'm going to tell you as economists, government, whenever you start putting regulations, it mucks up the market. And yep. makes it worse. Lorena Garcia talks about price controls. And I mean, you can talk about rent controls.
She's a big old commie,
your goal of making housing affordable is a good goal. Unfortunately, with this strategy, you're going to make it worse.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's going for this. Go ahead and try to tell these homeowners in Jefferson County, which they tried to do. You know, what could be classified as an ADU. So an alternate dwelling unit. So, you know, if you could just move some of these nice folks onto your property and into your, you know, $1.2 million home in Applewood, we would be grateful. None of this works. They have no solutions. All they're doing, I listened on the House floor this morning with the big, beautiful bill coming back from the Senate. All they do is complain. They never have solutions. Their solutions are always communist. We have one right here, Lorena Garcia. It's always take from you, and you, and give to the huddled masses, mostly illegals.
Your Bill of Rights is oppressing you, so you need let it go. So we can spend all of the money to take care of you because your Bill of Rights is oppressing you.
I can go on about when I sat in on that testimony when Lorena Garcia presented that, and the people that they brought in to testify for it was just stunning. You know, there was this one girl. I want to say her name was Hannah. Doesn't matter. But she was saying, yes, I'm for challenging Tabor because we could use those funds to do this. And I don't mind. You know, I don't need that $200 check that I get from Tabor. I would rather it go and have our legislators be able to make good policy with it. I'm like going, oh my goodness. But anyway, I'm going to have to get going pretty soon.
Yeah, we're going to get out of here. Just one final question for both of you. I named the show Happy Independence Day. Now it's Wednesday and it's the 2nd. It's not the 4th. And we know that, but it's the Colorado show for Independence Week. So I went with it. What does celebrating 4th of July mean to you guys? And what, any big plans that you've got going on for the holiday?
For me, obviously the journey that I've been on for the past 5 years, I realize how precious our freedoms are and how quickly they can be taken away, and that we've always got to be guarding them, standing in the gap. And my plans, hopefully I get sworn in tomorrow.
Oh.
So we'll be celebrating.
Yes.
Fantastic. Karen?
Great job. The 4th of July, let's see. My brother's birthday, he's a Independence Day baby. So the 4th of July, just, it symbolizes our freedom, obviously. I'm a military widow, so I appreciate this a lot more than others may. Mm-hmm. But the mission is now mine. So it's just time to do whatever you can to maintain this, save the Republic, bro. That's all. Mm-hmm. Save the Republic. I'm not, you know, I don't know what I'm doing this weekend. Maybe going out on the boat for a little bit. Not sure.
Fun.
Yeah.
That'll be fun. Most of my kids are gone. My son works. My oldest works on 4th of July because he's a lifeguard. You can't be in here without your camera on. mm-hmm.
Sure.
The other two are my middle son is off on a vacation, and my youngest has some plans for 4th of July. So it'll be me and my husband pretty quiet. But it's one of my all-time favorite holidays because it enshrines that, you know, when there's a long train of abuses, we have both a duty and a right to cast it off. Yep. And we have the right to live in freedom, and preserving and protecting our rights is the point. I'm very excited that we have a state senator now, that soon to be sworn in, senator-elect, that is an economist, that has the history and experience hands-on of understanding how government works with the, you know, how the legislative branch works with the other branches, how appropriations work and balancing those kinds of things. I'm pumped about that. And Linda, you know, you're an incredible person. You're a serious person. And you went through your credentials at the top of this. People of Colorado are incredibly lucky to have you. So congratulations. Super, super happy for you. We'll be holding, I told you this yesterday when I talked to you, you know, if you go down there and you become a politician and you start messing around, man, I'm going to hold your feet to fire. I'm going to call you out. But I'm not in fear of that because I know you. So
I ask, thank you so much. And I ask, I am going into the belly of the beast. Please cover me with prayer, discernment, knowledge, strength to stand up against this and to do God's will. Please keep me in prayer. It's evil and vile there.
Yeah, sure is. Well, Linda, thank you so much. We'll let you go because we had you booked for a 15-minute interview, yeah, and we did an hour and 15 minutes. So thank you so much for your time. And we'll talk to you again soon.
You guys take care.
You as well.
Well, you just show what, Darren?
I had a meeting. It went pretty well.
Very important meeting.
Good. What are you doing for 4th of July?
Probably go to, like,
all right, think about that while we hit our next couple fireworks of sponsors. You think about your answers to that question. We'll be right back.
If you haven't noticed, gold has reached a new high, all-time highs, actually, and keeps going up every day. Why is that? It's because precious metals are a long-time historical store of value. And if you own a portfolio and you have assets in the fiat currencies, i.e. stocks, bonds, cash, or whatever, you're vulnerable to hyperinflation, which is coming as our debt explodes another trillion every 90 days. It's really scary. So how do you protect yourself? Go to Advisor Metals. If you look on any of our CDM.press sites, about halfway down, there's an ad for Advisor Metals. Click on it, fill out the form for your contact info, and Igor Bashatsky will contact you and talk to you. It's an easy conversation. There's no sales pitch. He's completely verified by us. He has a regulatory background we've checked into. We've checked with his bankers. We've checked with his IRA custodians for metals. And we can highly recommend Advisor Metals and ERA. So go to Advisor Metals. If you call them directly, tell them we sent you at CDM, and he'll definitely take care of you. But protect your portfolio because you really need to. It's coming. Thank you.
Well, in the case of hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, these are two medications that have been FDA approved for use in humans for decades. They are very, very inexpensive. Interestingly, available over the counter in almost every other country other than the US and Canada. You can just walk into a pharmacy and buy them like we buy Tylenol in much of the world because they're that safe. And we've known for decades that ivermectin has very strong antiviral properties. It has anti-inflammatory properties. And both ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine are what we call zinc ionophores. They help to move zinc from the bloodstream into the cell, which is where it needs to be in order to fight off a virus. So lots of application for these. And we have every reason to believe that those drugs also will likely have some efficacy against H5N1 or a number of other respiratory viruses that we may meet down the road.
We're back.
Yes, we are.
Karen's almost back. There she is.
I'm gonna have to drop off here in a second.
No, we're way over time, but Darren joined. That we get his thoughts on Independence Day. So we were gonna talk about a whole bunch of stuff, but then we were just having such a good time with Linda that she took the whole show.
So she's running for senator.
She won. She is the senator elect. Yeah.
That's dope.
Yeah, she's amazing. So she gets sworn in tomorrow. I think she said.
Long time coming.
Yeah.
Okay.
Long time coming.
Finally got some good representation out of
Senate. I feel like she is the only one. She's the only person that is in the state Senate that has the focus of I'm not going down there to find common ground with communists and give more, you know, develop more regulation and more laws to govern the people of Colorado. She's like, we need to fix this thing. And that's her orientation. Yeah. And I'm super pumped about that.
I think she'll stick to it.
She's going to be
great. I think
she's the only one, which is crazy.
Yeah, because they're all psychopaths.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's Colorado.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't say it. You said it.
Yeah.
It's true.
I did. I'd say it again, too.
You haven't lived until you've seen one of those witches walking in front of you with a pride flag, speaking in a language I don't understand.
Yes, all this could have been avoided. All y'all had to do was move. This could have all been avoided.
No, we don't flee. We're not going to flee, Darren. We're not running away from the fight, especially when I think we got a shot. We got a shot at restoring the state. People are fed up.
Yeah, people are fed up. They're not there yet because we still have too much, but they're fed up.
Okay.
I think if we had free and fair elections, you would see a way different picture of Colorado than what we're told the outcome of the super fake elections are.
I think that
get rid of that trout mouth biatch.
Yeah, you ain't getting rid of that one until she's thrown in jail.
She might be, though.
Talking about Jenna?
I mean, Jenna. I was actually talking about Lorena Garcia.
Oh, that one, too. And what's her immigration status?
That's racist.
Darren said it. Technically, I don't think she's allowed to be called racist.
Yeah, right. That's true.
Right. Yes. I check more boxes.
Karen, you have to say all the racist things.
I don't care.
Black folks can't be racist. That's the name.
Reclaiming my time, checking my privilege.
So you better keep Martin Luther King name out your mouth.
Lorena Garcia, my ass.
Yo, I think a lot
your
of
Bill
these...
of Rights is oppressing you. That is her tagline.
Well, good.
Yo, I think a lot of these people, Jesse, what's his name? Jesse Kelly. He pointed something out very interesting. He's like, even though it may not seem like there's winning going on, there's a lot of winning going on. Mitt Romney gone.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. He's like, there's a lot of things that are going well. Mitch McConnell gone. Dick Durbin's about to leave. Like, so Tom Tillis about to be out. You know. So right. He's like, it's going the way it's supposed to go. He's like, you know, he said the funny thing about it is that. You can't even call it the Republican Party anymore. It's just the party with sanity.
Yeah. Right. And that's the thing. The Republican Party, the establishment Republican Party, who Linda in this race was running against, the establishment Republican Party is still very much committed to the status quo. And we're going to see more of this, but I think you're spot on, man. And, you know, Jesse Kelly or whoever said it was spot on. There is a lot of winning happening. And there's byproducts of that winning too, like people exposing themselves and realizing who is actually committed to making America great again, putting America first, unleashing the American economy, making all of our lives better for Americans, and who is still very much committed to globalism. We're seeing those people really just shine a spotlight on themselves right now. And that's fantastic. And remember what Trump said. You're going to be like, no, I can't take it anymore. No more winning. It's too much winning. And I'm going to say, no, we have to keep winning.
More please. More please. Overflow. I thought that actually yesterday after all the, look, I'm going to tell you, when I had my, oh my God, so much winning moment, when I posted on X, like scorched earth, when people were mad because the president was talking about, oh, well, you talked about alligator Alcatraz. Oh, he said, well, they need to learn to swim faster.
Like, that's what he said. He said, they need to go like this.
They need to go like this. I'm like, yeah, what's up? What's up?
I'm loving it. I'm loving
the
it.
Idea that it is bitch. Is an idea that an escapee is going to get eaten by an alligator? Trump's like, well, this is not a pleasant business.
Hey, you know, hold on. We got to give a shout out to Big Ron. Big Ron, okay. Now, here's the funny thing. He said, when they asked him, they said, so what is the what's the security thing that's going on here? He said, there's no place to go.
He did. Go ahead, Ron.
Ron sounded a little too excited about this thing.
Look, like, I wish we could have did a side-by-side during this show of Governor DeSantis and this squishy pink clothes shirt wearing fool at the Pride Parade the other day. The
one you're talking about our governor. Our governor versus Darren's governor. That's the side-by-side you want?
That fool is not my guy. I don't claim that tub of lard. I don't claim him. I don't know who does.
Did you wish his husband a happy birthday yesterday? Because it was his husband's birthday.
No, I did not.
Karen,
this is probably not going to be the best take, but I think being gay has a size limit. I don't think you should be like, you can't be like big and gay. Like,
now you're being fat homophobic.
That is
fatophobic. Like fat. Well, no, that's fat. He's being both fat phobic and homophobic.
So
he's putting conditions on people's homoism.
So I'm FOMO-phobic.
You can't do that, I don't think.
So now I'm FOMO-phobic?
I think you're homophobic. Yeah.
No, it's like, I see like 6'5 dudes that are like huge.
You can only be.
They're like, hey.
You can only be attractive and thin to be gay, is Gary's
take. You can't be big and sassy.
You can't be 6'5 and sassy. That doesn't make sense.
Didn't y'all see that LeBronica James with a purse?
He had so much trouble after this.
He was carrying
a purse. It'd be like, and you're like wide too. It's like, come on. Are you
Squishy? Yeah.
Governor Squishy.
6'5".
Pretty
310 pounds in game.
He's also obsessed with Taylor Swift. He wrote her a letter in which he replaced like clauses with her song titles and song lyrics, and he coded them in rainbow.
Well, my question is, does who care? Like, who really like gay. Actually cares I know. About this? Like, I do know. People actually care about this?
12-year-old girls and the governor.
So, like, what's That's his nasty. Reputation? What's his reputation with 12-year-old girls? Like,
he nasty.
Do they like him?
He has a daughter, I think. I don't know if she's 12.
How? Explain to me how. How?
Well, I mean,
what did he just figure out he was gay?
You need to know where babies come from.
Adoption
agency, Darren.
Of course he adopted her. How many? Did he get them from Guatemala?
The literal stork.
I was getting ready to say, like, was he like, I thought he was like maybe one way before and then just, you know, and kind of, he decided to go for
a conspiracy theory about that, that he's actually straight, but that he's playing gay.
Yeah. That's what I said.
Because it was a better, you know, it gave him better political chances. Yeah. So when they invented him, because his real name is Schultz, I think, like Jared Schultz, and he's Jared Polis. And when they invented Jared Polis, they made him gay because it was better for what they were doing in Colorado.
Is he Jewish? Is he Jewish or something?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I have no idea if he's really gay or if it's an act. I do know that he's terrible for Colorado and that he's made everything worse, though. And I don't think that's because of, I don't think that's because he's gay or because he's Jewish. I think it's because he's a communist.
I think he's a communist.
So the rumor is that he's pitching and catching.
Ah,
maybe. I mean, that's the conspiracy theory. I don't know. Actually, I don't know that conspiracy theory includes him actually catching so much as they tell the world he's pitching and catching because of the political benefits of it.
Oh, but hey, listen to you, but I can't say that dudes can't be big and gay. Okay.
You can't be, what did you say? Fat and sassy, big and sassy.
You can't be big and sassy.
Yeah, it just doesn't work. It just
no.
Does not work.
It's a
weird dynamic. It's like, especially when you see like the big 6'5", 300-pound ones with like this little small guy. Like, what the heck are you doing to this kid?
You're sweating. Like, what is wrong with you?
Like, what is going on with you?
What about
alone.
When you see that same one at the Pride Parade in the BDSM gear?
Gross.
Yeah, that's wild.
Which
that's
we've wild. All seen. That let's is, be honest.
I ain't seen that shit.
On the internet, you have. Uh-huh. I haven't seen it in person either. I remember last year, I think it was last year's Pride, we were talking about the dude that was dressed up as a pony swinging around the stripper pole in the middle of the street, in the middle of the day, in the middle of the Pride Parade, like Main Street, Denver. I don't know what street it was.
At some point in time, like there needs to be some laws made because I don't think children need to be.
They already exist. They just ignore them. They're public decency laws. Yeah. It's like, you know, public indecency and indecent exposure and all that kind of stuff. They just don't, they don't
look it's
enforce those laws when it comes to gay orgies in the middle of the street.
Just that's like true. It's different for the individuals who drive with no tag, no plate, no license, no insurance. It's fine for them. Excuse them because they're illegals. But if your
refugees,
monkey ass drives
Karen,
around.
New coming refugees. Newcomers.
Would it expire tag? Newcomers. They literally tell you that we are enforcing expired tags. I'm like, wait a minute.
Only on citizens.
Wait a minute. So you're not enforcing no tag, no plate, no identifying anything. You're not bothering them.
Gypsy cabs are fine.
Because they're illegals. They're fine. See,
my question is, wouldn't that be like a civil rights violation?
Why are you being inequitable to newcomers?
Because they're stealing my money.
Stop giving it to them. That's your fault.
You guys see the videos of the people flipping out because they have to, and we'll cover this on next week's show because we don't have time to get into it now. But in Denver, they have to cut a ton of staff because of their budget shortfall, and they're all freaking out about it. Yep. You know what they're not going to cut? Their newcomer budgets.
That's a fact.
Yeah. Yeah. And interestingly enough, they also said they're going to now utilize a merit-based system to figure out who they're going to keep and who they're going to throw away. Oh, merit-based? Who does that sound like? Oh, Trump.
How convenient.
And America. It sounds like America. It sounds like the American dream that that what you have in America is opportunity. You don't have exactly the same opportunities as everybody else, and we can't force that because that's communism. But what you do have is the ability to work hard, to put your energy and the fruit of your labor into what you determine. And the government isn't going to put its thumb on the scales for or against you. The government right. isn't going to create different sets of rules for different population groups. That's the American dream.
Right.
Well, and here's my thing.
It's not the Colorado dream.
If that's really true, Ash, you know what you know what happened? You'd be on freaking Fox News by now.
Right. Yeah. We'd be the number one show in the nation, I think.
That's a fact.
Just saying, man.
All right, everybody. Well, that is the show that we have for you today. Great show, Karen. Thank you so much for being here the entire time. Darren, it was nice to see you for a couple minutes as well.
I grace you with my presence.
Yeah, well, super. Well, we feel graced.
As you should. As you should. We are. You know what I'm saying?
He's a hook. He's a hook.
All right, everybody. We will be back here next Wednesday for your midweek lunch break here on the Colorado Show on CDM. We make sure that you follow Vaccine Waters. I thought you were changing to something else.
Not yet.
Okay. Well, he might not be Vaccine Waters next week. So follow Vaccine Waters 25 while you still can. And Real Karen Jean on X. I'm Ash in America, Ash with an E. We will see you guys next week. Have a great week, everyone. And happy 4th of July. Ooh, happy Independence 4th. Day. Yeah, be safe this weekend. Don't get arrested. And freedom, baby. Bye. Mm-hmm.